Coming up on today's Next Fan Up podcast.
Although the black eye continues to become darker, certainly the NFL's popularity isn't waning in any way.
Yes, and we'll find out what this means.
Well, if it's 2020, they'll have the benefits of hindsight. But
Oh, we have a little bit more funny stuff, too.
That's kind of like Anheuser-Busch making a brand new can or calling the beer America.
All right, enough of that. Let's get the podcast started. Here we go.
Listen. Hello. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Oh, it's another edition of the Next Fan Up podcast, and we've got ankle injuries galore. Byron Bell, done for the season. He of the Tennessee Titans. Tyler Eifert might miss the beginning of the season. We'll get into that definitely. Ladarius Green, now of the Steelers, also with an ankle injury. And my ankle is coming along just fine. Thanks for asking. I'm Pod Vader. I'm here with four wonderful superfans, and we will have an excellent guest interview a little bit later on in the show with Arthur Arkish of ProFootballWeekly.com. Let me introduce you to the crew. We've got our regular guys, Greg from the Steelers. Hello, Greg.
Hey, Jay. How's it going today?
It's going well. My ankle, I think, is doing a little better than Ladarius Green's, apparently.
No comment.
Neil is our Washington super fan across the pond in Scotland.
Hey, Jay, how you doing? Hey, Greg. I'm just, Jay, I'm a little bit worried about playing soccer tomorrow night with all these ankle injuries. Fingers crossed.
Hopefully, is your team any good? Would I want them to be my boyfriends?
Absolutely. Are we good? We left good a long time ago. We are absolutely terrific.
Well, maybe I can put my curse on your team and then it can all go downhill from there. No comment. And now Justin is coming to us as our Seattle Seahawks super fan. Hello, Justin.
Hey, Pod. Hey, fellas. Man, I wish my tight end just had a bum ankle, not a knee that was shredded into nothing.
Or perhaps he could join the bear on meth up in a tree. That could work too.
That could be our new mascot.
And joining our regular Thursday crew, I have James, our Houston Texans superfan. Hello, James.
Hey, Pod. When's the cast cutting ceremony for your ankle?
Ooh, that's a great question. Considering I don't have a cast to cut, I just have this walking boot. There will be no cutting. And to update everyone on my lovely broken ankle, I am walking on the walking boot, so, and without crutches, although the doctor told me not to. I have been, because I'm that kind of guy. All right. Speaking of being that kind of guy, we'd love to hear from you, folks. NextFanUp@gmail.com is our email address. You can tweet us at NFU Podcast, and of course, follow us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/NFU Podcast. We'll be including our top 10 list. We, you know, I was inspired by watching the NFL Network over these past couple weeks with my broken ankle. And I was watching the top 10 49ers of all time. And I was, first of all, shocked and amazed by the way they were trying to pull off that Joe Montana wasn't the number one guy. And then I thought, this is a topic our superfans need to get on. So, coming up the next couple weeks, hopefully we'll have those top 10 lists for you for all 32 teams based on our own super fans. And then we'll be doing division previews starting in June. Oh, God, that's next week. So, yes, we'll be having all of our division previews, all 32 teams split up by division, previewing it for you right up until we get to training camp in July. All right, enough business there. Oh, subscribe and listen to our show on iTunes. And for those of you who have Android phones, use the AHA radio app to find the Next Fan Up podcast. All right, that's the business part of the show. Let's get down to the fun stuff, and that is football. And the owners were kind enough to have a meeting this week to give us some things to talk about. First item on the docket that we're going to hit on, Super Bowl hosts. There are three new cities that will be hosting Super Bowls in the coming years. Super Bowl Large 3 in 2019 will be hosted by Atlanta and their brand new stadium. Super Bowl Live will be hosted by South Florida and their new renovated stadium. And Super Bowl LV be hosted by the Rams and their brand new spanking stadium out in Los Angeles, not St. Louis. There's a theme here because except for this coming Super Bowl being hosted in Houston, the next Super Bowl, Super Bowl L2, will be hosted by Minneapolis in their brand new stadium. You think the NFL's got something to say here about if you want to host a Super Bowl?
Yeah, absolutely. And what's interesting is I believe when Jerry Jones first built AT&T Stadium, the plan was to have multiple Super Bowls there in Jerry World. He's only hosted one in 2011, and it doesn't seem like there's going to be another return to Dallas anytime soon. I'm looking forward to this year, obviously, because the Super Bowl is going to be played in Houston, and I think Houston has a better chance of making it to their home field than the Rams will in 2021. That's not to say we have a great chance of making it, just better than the Rams. And of course, we're going to go back to the scene of the crime of Janet Jackson and Nipplegate this year. So who is not excited for that?
Only if we have nipples. Neil, how about the prospect of maybe an international Super Bowl? What do you think about that?
No, I'm not really up for an international Super Bowl. I think that's the greatest sporting event of your of the NFL calendar. Keep it over there in America. I would hate to think that one of our great sporting events here in Britain would be traveling somewhere else. I just wouldn't fly, wouldn't like it. I tell you one thing I would like, Jay, and that is I wish to drop these stupid Roman numerals and just say it's Super Bowl 51 or Super Bowl 52. It's ridiculous. One of my pet peeves with the NFL. And if I could just add one more thing to these Super Bowl things, I would quite like to have seen another winter Super Bowl. You know, the cold weather one we had, I think that was New York. Was that the year before last? I thought that was terrific. I'd love to see snow at a Super Bowl.
Neil, you and I are going to go toe-to-toe on numerous things. First of all, the Roman numerals is like the one classy thing that's left in our society. The fact that we're going to get rid of the Roman numerals on the Super Bowl, I disagree with you wholeheartedly there. Plus, I just like the way that it looks, and calling it something different than the Roman numerals is a lot of fun, too. And second of all, I do not want to see another cold weather Super Bowl. That was stupid. That should never happen again. Let's talk to, you know what? Let's bring in Justin. Justin, you don't necessarily have a cold weather stadium, but the weather plays a huge factor in Seattle. Would you want to see Seattle weather playing a factor in a Super Bowl?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that football, more than almost any other sport, is designed to be played in the elements. I think that the character of the game is enhanced when you have like rain coming down or you see snow on the field. I think a Super Bowl in weather like that, especially if it's a good game, could be iconic. It could be an all-time great. So, Pod, you are out of your mind. In addition, man, get rid of those Roman numerals. It is so bad. Here's what I'm not looking forward to is Super Bowl 55. So that's going to be Super Bowl LVIII. That is ridiculous. Please don't put that thing on anything anywhere. That's going to be awful.
LVIII is 58, by the way.
Yep.
Just what did I say? You said 55. Yeah.
Son of a gun. Yeah. 58. You have almost as many letters in the number as you do in like the rest of the word. That's stupid.
See, I'm totally with Jay on this. First
come,
thing,
come to the dark side, Greg.
The Super Bowl Roman numerals are awesome. Triple X was horrible. I mean, that was the Dallas Steelers Super Bowl, and it's Triple X for a reason. And, you know, like, it's just an iconic thing. Like, that, it looks good on magazine covers. I love it. You got people like Justin that don't know what number they're looking at. I mean, it's great. So, and then the cold weather cities getting Super Bowls. I mean, part of me is like, they extort the fans to get them to pay for these stadiums, so every city who wants a Super Bowl should get one. And the other time is, I don't want to go to Detroit even. I mean, that was an inside game, but I don't want to go there for a Super Bowl. It's going to be freezing. They should all be in Tampa.
All right, James, you're the last person to weigh in on this. You got your choice of Roman numerals and indoor outdoor stadiums. Go.
Well, for the indoor stadiums, you know, the stadium that hosted the most Super Bowls is the Superdome down in New Orleans. I don't really care indoor versus outdoor. You know, the weather is just kind of a novel thing. It can make the games look really great, or we could have games like there were in London where the punts are literally diving, you know, 6 inches into the ground. I would rather give up the ability to see an amazing snow game and totally get rid of the chance of a very crappy field, very crappy game just as a result of the weather. As for the Roman numerals, while I can tell the difference between 55 and 58, I say let's get rid of them. You say it's a way to kind of class up the Super Bowl. That's kind of like Anheuser-Busch making a brand new can or calling the beer America. You know, the product's going to remain the same. You can't just class it up by doing one small thing.
Well, you guys are wrong on the Roman numerals. Let me know how you feel about these topics, especially the Roman numerals topic. Tweet us at NFU Podcast. Maybe we should tweet that out right now and see what you guys are thinking live. You know what? As a matter of fact, why don't we do that? I'm going to tweet that out right now. And then we're going to go to our interview right now with our special guest, Arthur Arkish of Pro Football Weekly. He's going to tell us a little bit about what else was happening at the owners' meetings. And then we're going to get back into this in just a moment. All right. And now it is time to bring in our special guest of the week. This week, I'm very happy to bring in a new guest to the show. His name is Arthur Arkish. He's an NFL writer, part of the ProFootballWeekly.com folks. You can read, see him everywhere. Hello, Arthur. How are you?
I am doing well. I'm very happy to be on the show. Thank you for having me.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, we see the spring meetings are going on, and it gives us a little bit of something to talk about during this quote-unquote dead period in the NFL. OTA is going on at the same time. Do they do OTAs and the owner meetings at the same time on purpose?
You know, that's a good question. I hadn't really given that a ton of thought, but I suppose maybe there is a little bit of design behind that. Although, who knows? The NFL tries to amp up these OTAs like they actually mean something. And I can tell you, I was out at the Bears' first one Wednesday, and there's really very, very little going on there. So not sure if there is a correlation, but obviously they are taking place at the same time.
Take us a little bit behind the curtain. What are the spring meetings like? And I'll start with this first question I have from one of our super fans, Greg. He wants to know, you know, how much of the things that the owners are voting on have been discussed beforehand? How much of the negotiation is actually happening at these meetings?
Yeah, you know, it's a good question. I think if you talk specifically about, you know, the bidding of the Super Bowls, everyone essentially knew that they were going to end up in Atlanta, South Florida, and Los Angeles. So a lot of that discussion's been going on behind the scenes. And I guess when it comes to that specific issue, it really just boils down to the new stadiums or the renovations that these teams have been committed to and the reasoning behind them getting the Super Bowl. So in that one instance, I think there was very little to be disclosed except for making, you know, it's kind of just a formality and making everything official. But it's an opportunity for the owners to get together and, you know, kind of rub shoulders and all the powerful people in the NFL in one place at one time. And I only know so much about what's being discussed behind that many, you know, men with that much power and influence together. There's bound to be some important topics, you know, counted on, discovered.
Well, what's it like to cover the scene? Where are the reporters located during most of this?
Yeah, I mean, it just depends on the setup. In Charlotte, I'm guessing, and I, in full disclosure, I was not in Charlotte. I was reporting from here in Chicago, the headquarters of Pro Football Weekly. But I know when owners' meetings have been held here in the past, normally the reporters are kind of staking out the outside of the hotel, or if they're allowed into the hotel lobby, they can kind of try and catch a glimpse of whatever owners happen to be by. But they kind of get as close to the action as the NFL will allow. And, you know, anyone who has followed the sport closely knows that that typically is pretty limited. So they could be hanging out in a near parking lot, or really just whatever the best access they can find.
Take us into a press conference. You know, as we watched Roger Goodell at his press conference during the meetings, I mean, he got grilled. How difficult is it to ask those tough questions of the commissioner?
Yeah, it's certainly very difficult, and it's kind of an esteemed position to be in. I know from being a past commissioner, kind of the state of the league addresses at Super Bowl, past Super Bowls, that, you know, those reporters are vetted extremely hard, and you know, only certain questions are going to make their way through. Roger Goodell has a very interesting press conference approach, we'll call it, for lack of a better word. They tend to be very awkward and very vague, but yeah, it is kind of a high pressure situation if you are in position to be able to ask the question to the commissioner, and then get kind of his typical non-answers as we've grown accustomed to over the years.
Let's dive a little bit into the concussion situation in the NFL. The report that came out from ESPN outside the lines about the NFL maybe trying to steer the way the research was being done through the government organization, the NIH. What are your thoughts about that? Do you think the NFL is really trying to solve their concussion issue, or do you think there's a little bit of underhandedness going on?
Yeah, I think it's definitely the latter point that you just mentioned, and it's unfortunate because they're able to take a position, you know, whereas they are this kind of leading voice in trying to, you know, in broker more research and find out everything they can. And then obviously, as the outside the lines report revealed, and that was actually from a congressional hearing report, the NFL has actually gone out of its way to try and influence who is being selected for some of these research studies. They are offering up money. In this case, I believe it was $16 million, but then they are very, they're quite strong-arming in their position of where that money is going to go, and there's certain stipulations that need to be in place for the money actually to make its way to where everyone is led to believe it is. So it's an ugly situation. It's been unfortunate. Obviously, it's a black eye for the NFL, and as each of these new reports comes out, there was something in the New York Times earlier in the spring, a big report, obviously, about, you know, another instance of them trying to kind of exert their influence and try and shape the whole concussion story in the undergoing of research in their own ways. It's not good. You know, I think there's a lot more that can be done. I'll at least say that much. And until we see tangible strides made, it's going to be hard to really trust the NFL more than people do right now.
Yeah, I was reading one of our fans who had just watched the movie Concussion. I mean, the NFL right now seems to be going down the slope, and as they get more and more involved in more government business, you know, Deflategate now in the federal courts with the possibility of being heard by the Supreme Court. I mean, I doubt it will get that far, but it does have the possibility. And now this with the concussions, I mean, is the NFL perhaps endangering that monopoly status that they have?
You know, it's a great question. I think it's certainly one that's fair to raise. I mean, we have to kind of wait and see how this whole Deflategate charade continues to unfold. It's really hard to know. Like you said, it's still pretty rare that it is actually heard by the Supreme Court. And it's also very rare that Tom Brady and his legal team are actually going to get their wishes for a rehearing granted. But you know, there hasn't been much of a timeline laid out on that. But you know, that kind of gets back to the New York Times report, I believe, from earlier in the spring regarding the NFL's involvement with Big Tobacco and some of the legal procedures that Big Tobacco used many years ago. And there were kind of some conflicts of interest that were discovered there. And then, of course, the NFL came out, you know, very, very adamantly denying the report. We haven't seen sort of that kind of response to the extent with the most recent congressional report as we did for the New York Times one a couple months ago. So I think it all kind of continues to unfold, but you know, the NFL's power isn't questioned, and their popularity isn't either. Because like I said, it seems, although the black eye continues to become darker, there's been an inverse relationship, but certainly the NFL's popularity isn't waning in any way.
It's very interesting. You said you were at Bears OTAs. Not much to report on there. What's the sense right now in Chicago about their team this season?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be an improved football team for sure. They had a nice offseason and certainly made a lot of strides to improve the defense, I believe. Gave, you know, John Fox and Vic Fangio some really nice pieces to work with. I think the inside linebacker position was not only the worst on the Bears, but probably among the worst in the league last year. And then to go out and get Danny Trevathan and Jarrell Freeman in free agency, two of the best free agents available at their position. There's no question that that's going to improve the defense. And, you know, I thought they had a nice draft getting – there wasn't a lot of speed pass rush in this draft, but Leonard Floyd, they did pay a premium for him, but they're expecting him to contribute right away. So typically John Fox's teams make a big jump in year two, and I think that is reasonable to expect. And at the same time, there's a lot of questions that need to be answered on offense. It seems like while the defense progressed, you could argue that the offense went in the opposite direction, obviously, with the trade of Martellus Bennett and not re-signing Matt Forte. They're counting on some relatively unproven guys to kind of step up and fill the bill there. So there are some questions, but, you know, the talent level has certainly been upgraded, and I do think that the tenure for Ryan Pace and John Fox is off to a very good start.
Excellent. Arthur, where can people find you?
Yeah, check us out at ProFootballWeekly.com. You can find me on Twitter at Arthur Arkus, and Pro Football Weekly just has kind of reinvented itself in the past couple of months. So we'd love it if people come and check out the site. We're doing all kinds of feature stuff and podcasts and columns and analysis and all kinds of good stuff for you over there. And really just looking forward to continuing to dive into this off season and get to hit on some other hopefully more unique stories as well.
One of those podcasts, the Pro Football Weekly podcast on Blog Talk Radio's front page right now. You guys talked about all 32 of the quarterback situations in the NFL, obviously some better than others.
Yeah, no doubt about it. There is a scarcity at that position, unlike, you know, many others, and not just football, but all professional sports. There's not enough good ones to go around, so we thought it'd be fun, and what you kind of called correctly sort of the dead period or the very quiet period of the NFL offseason, to kind of just go through all the depth charts. We actually did the same thing this last week for all the skill position talent on offense, and I believe today's podcast will get into the offensive and defensive lines. It seems like when there's not a lot of huge news going on right now is the time to kind of take inventory on you know, all the teams' depth charts and situations like that.
Awesome. That's ProFootballWeekly.com's Arthur Arkus. Thanks very much for joining us today, and hopefully we'll talk to you again down the road.
Of course. My pleasure. Thanks for having me, and enjoy the rest of your day.
All right, that's Arthur Arkus, as you can see, talking about the owners' meetings. And we got a little bit into Roger Goodell, and I want to get more into that here now with the rest of our super fans. You know, the congressional report coming out saying that the NFL waged an improper campaign to influence a government study. This came to us from ESPN and Outside the Lines, you know, trying to... the study was to have been funded out of a $30 million unrestricted gift the NFL gave the NIH in 2012. But apparently they tried to do some, I'll just label it as underhanded things to steer the way that research was going. To me, this is very disturbing. And I believe one of you on this podcast just recently watched the movie Concussion, or let's put it this way. Have any of you seen the movie Concussion yet?
No, nor will I.
Why not?
Basically, it has Will Smith in it. And I think he was hasn't been good for about 10 years. So
listen, it's supposedly better than Draft Day. But
that's
then
not
again,
saying anything. I mean... I literally would rather watch Finding Dory than Draft Day. So
the Browns were featured in Draft Day, and nothing involving the Browns is good.
Oh my. Is today just let's take shots at the other team's day? I think that's what it is. Anyway, what do we think about teams, this report country. Coming out about the NFL trying to steer the research with the government? I mean, it sounds like they're heading down a slippery slope here.
To me, it wasn't surprising at all. Take out the word NFL and concussion or CTE, whatever they put in there, and fill in tobacco industry and cancer or greenhouse gas emissions and oil industry. I mean, we want to avoid the whole political discussion getting money out of politics, but I mean, this isn't a uncommon occurrence where an industry pays either jointly or fully for a study and then wants some form of editorial control over what that study says. It's highlighted because people care about the NFL, just like they cared about tobacco regulations or, you know, greenhouse gas emissions. But if you go down to any level of funding for any university paper, you will occur. There will occasionally be times when the people providing the funding want some way, shape, or form of editorial control. And then it's on the integrity of the person accepting the grant or the institution that's releasing the findings to basically say, no, you gave us this money. We're going to go ahead and do what we're going to do with it. And if that institution can stand up to that particular interest group, doesn't want to face down the lawyers or the lack of funding, then they're going to fight that fight. If it's easier for them to just say, screw it, we really want this money or we really need this money, then there's going to be some compromises made.
Mm. It, to me, you know, the NFL, and I brought this up with Arthur, the NFL dealing with this, with concussions, you know, a Deflategate case that has the opportunity to be heard by the Supreme Court, the more and more the government is going to get involved in the NFL, the more and more it seems to me likely that the NFL is going to lose their little monopoly status. What do you guys think about that opinion?
Any publicity is going to be good publicity for them. You look at all of the negative ads toward a particularly orange political candidate we have this year. And, you know, he got the equivalent of $2 billion in free media coverage. And, you know, he's now the Republican nomination. That's money he did not have to spend. This is money the NFL does not have to spend to get, you know, eyeballs on the NFL, people talking about the NFL. And ultimately, that is a good thing for the NFL because people are going to wave this away as, oh, well, you know, the Deflategate thing, that's funny that it's going to go to the Supreme Court. You know, what a waste of government resources. But now we're not talking about the NBA playoffs. We're not talking about the NHL playoffs. We're not talking about Major League Baseball. We're all focused on making the NFL a year-long thing.
I'm glad you brought up the NBA playoffs because I'd like to welcome the Golden State Warriors to the Patriots Club. It's not a fun club to be in, Golden State fans. Enjoy it. You get to stew in it for a whole year at least. All right. Let's talk about a few other things that came out of the owners' meetings. There was a rules change passed, and that rules change had to do directly with the use of instant replay. Basically, what they've done is they took the temporary rule they used during the playoffs this past year and made it a permanent rule so that the replay officials and designated members of the officiating department at the league office may consult with the on-field officials to provide information on the correct application of playing rules, including appropriate assessment of penalty yardage, proper down, and status of the game clock. Speaking of the game clock, they will also be involved in watching any sort of improper clock running out. And Greg, as we talked early before the show began, your team was involved in one of those incidents that may have brought this rule about.
Yeah, they had, 18 seconds right off the clock in the week 3 or 4 Monday night game when the Steelers were playing the Chargers. And it worked out for the Steelers because they won with that fantastic dive by Le'Veon Bell, but 18 more seconds would have made me feel better, that's for sure. So I think it's good that they're going back and they put that rule change in. But the other thing that struck my interest here was if the rules are so complicated that the officials, six educated men on the field, cannot understand the rule book in real time, doesn't that say everything right there? When you get down to what is a catch and whatnot, don't they just need to simplify things here?
Yeah, absolutely correct, Greg. Simplification would be a good thing in the sport. I think a couple of things for me with these changes. The problem the NFL has is that the development of TV coverage and camera angles and all the rest of it, Twitter, all the social media, the things that are available to fans nowadays, that puts a lot of pressure on the NFL to get things right. And if they have the technology, then use it. I'd rather spend an extra minute or so with the officials looking at issues and tight clocks and replay stuff. If we get the right decision and that helps get the right result in the game, nothing worse than games being spoiled by poor officiating when they have the means to get it right.
Yeah, I'm with Neil on that one. I'm all for them using whatever tools they have available in order to get the call right. The thing that I have a big issue with, though, is the league office itself having any direct input in the course of a game. I mean, you can't tell me that there's not skepticism of the league office, of kind of their specific aims as it relates to certain teams, that sort of thing. It might just be conspiracy theories. But that still affects how things are perceived by the fans. And so what I'm just not comfortable with is an important play in a key game, the outcome being determined by what the league office is calling in and saying to the referees. I think that is an awful, awful precedent. At its worst, all of these, 100-year-old theories of the league kind of cooking the games could possibly come to fruition in some cases. And even at a minimum, it'll cast this shadow over decisions that end up being controversial where people ask this question. So, again, expand instant replay. I'm cool with that. Do not let the league office say a word to the officiating crew during the game.
But, I mean, other sports take this to its logical conclusion. You have hockey and baseball. They just have a head replay center. And, you say you don't want the league office influencing the decision. Do you really think that, these six officials on the field aren't influenced by the home team yelling at them, booing or cheering? There are studies out there that show that home teams get better calls or at least lean towards on the officials. And it's, boils down to a human nature thing of you don't want 60,000 people booing at you. And if you're going to get second guessed, you might as well not make your life harder for the next, for the remainder of that game.
Here's the difference, though. The human element has always been a part of refereeing and officiating, and that's not going to change. But in baseball, the calls usually just come down to a matter of, does the baseball arrive before his foot touches the bag, or where was the tag applied? Things that are pretty easily verifiable on tape, things that are very, very black and white. Football is not that simple. A lot of it comes down to a lot more interpretation in the way you apply the rules, because it is a much, much more complex rule book. And so if you are putting that in the hands of people who aren't there, and this is as a guy who really doesn't have any issue with the league office, but I know that league-wide there is a lot of suspicion about the motives of the NFL as an entity as it relates to certain teams. To me, that is a recipe for absolute disaster and could result in some catastrophic, controversial decisions.
I'm with Justin here on... I don't want the league office necessarily directly involved in the way that the game is called or the outcome of games at the end of the day. I'd rather trust the guys that have been entrusted with calling a game right down the middle rather than having, that eye in the sky perhaps coming in and doing something perhaps a little improper. But I think that's a little... That might be a little conspiracy theory-ish. I might agree there that the NFL would do something like that. But it does open that sort of question up and brings us to the next transition. As we look at a team perhaps looking to move to Las Vegas, that's the sort of thing that you don't want people questioning is the integrity of your game. And that has been one of the main reasons why the NFL has not allowed a team to move to Vegas, but it seems like the Las Vegas Raiders is closer to a real thing than not. What do we think about the Las Vegas Raiders here?
Start things off. Mark Davis needs to get a new haircut. Jim Carrey wants his Dumb and Dumber haircut back. I mean, yeah. So that's all I have about that.
But who in the list of NFL owners has a good haircut? I mean, you got Stan Kroenke and Art Schell. I mean, there's really not any great haircuts in NFL owners.
Paul Allen looks like a regular human being. That's probably the best you're going to get amongst billionaires.
I think we need Tim's opinion on this one.
Is Tim the only one of us who has great hair?
Supposedly great hair.
Luscious Jay, locks.
Can I just drag this back to the original question that you asked? As quickly
certainly,
as possible?
Please.
I think I'm all for a team in Vegas. I think it's long overdue. Interesting that wasn't there some positive words from Jerry Jones and Robert Kraft? And I think if you got those guys behind you, then it's surely almost a done deal. You know, the whole gambling thing in the NFL. Yeah, come on, guys, get over it. People bet on sports. There we go. We've done it. Let's just move a team out there. It would be a great setting for a team. It would be hugely popular, I think, over here in the UK for a Vegas team. And get them out there. They're playing in a baseball park, for goodness sake. Ridiculous.
Okay.
By the way, speaking of gambling, if you had followed my picks last year, you would have made money. And if you followed Greg's picks, you would have made a lot of money.
And I don't gamble. So that's the irony. So.
I don't necessarily have a strong opinion on this one way or another, but to sort of play devil's advocate, Neil, if NFL players manage to come up with the party boat in a place as, I don't want to say boring, but as kind of even-keeled as Minnesota, what kind of trouble are they going to get into in Vegas on a bye week? That would be my one concern.
I'll just stay back to Justin there. I wouldn't care about a few scandals like that at all. It would surely be far better than talking about your guys' haircuts.
Well, isn't this also an image question for the NFL, and they're changing their image slightly if they go to Vegas? I mean, right now, aren't they portraying themselves as being like a family sport, you know? And moving to Vegas, that would turn at least some portion of the people off, right?
That hey, there's great family entertainment in Vegas.
Yeah, Vegas has gone through several iterations where they, you know, oh, this is where you go for, you know, drunken debauchery. Oh, no, we're really a family destination. Oh, no, have all your, you know, bachelor and bachelorette parties out here. I mean, Vegas is going to cater to however much money they can get in there. I mean, they're never going to be confused with Disney World, but they're going to always say we have activities for the whole family. I think it made sense to not have a team in Vegas when the league was first starting out, because the players weren't really making all that much money. There wasn't the kind of oversight there is currently. Now we can argue whether or not that oversight is good or heavy handed, but there is more oversight and there's a lot more money going to the players. There's a lot more for the NFL to lose to kind of not regulate itself and to make sure that, you know, players or officials aren't being paid off. And on top of that, gambling isn't restricted just to Las Vegas anymore. You know, Neil lives in a country that I would really like to adopt their stance on gambling here in the States, that you know, you can go several places and just place a bet on anything, you know, politics, sports, what have you, and you know, basically destigmatize the whole gambling thing, which, you know, a team in Vegas would help do. The NFL partners up with state and local lotteries, and which is kind of interesting for a program that doesn't want to promote gambling, or an institution that doesn't want to promote gambling. They're like, here, you know, you can't bet on our games, but please buy our lottery tickets with, you know, at best a 1 in 4 shot of actually getting your money back.
You also have fantasy football, which in its essence is also gambling.
We do not recognize your opinion on that one, Neil.
Yeah, that's a slippery slope, to say the least. Especially since we very much would love to see FanDuel as a potential sponsor of the next Fan Up podcast.
Or DraftKings. We're not particular.
So, by the way, if we're talking about the NFL cleaning up their image, it sounds like haircuts all the way around would do the trick. All right.
Work for
Moving
Giants
on
United.
Now. Moving on now, we brought up at the beginning of the show all the ankle injuries that seem to be plaguing the NFL right now. Greg is correct in that it is not the regular season, so Ladarius Green right now, the prognostication on his ankle is that he will be more than ready for the regular season. However, the news isn't as positive for Bengals tight end Tyler Eifert, who's apparently undergoing surgery on the ankle he injured at the Pro Bowl. Oh boy, this sort of goes back to should we be playing the Pro Bowl or not. If the Bengals are without Eifert for, you know, any period of time, they've already lost most of their wide receivers. I don't think they can afford to lose Tyler Eifert right now. Greg, since the Bengals are in your division, let's start with you.
Well, Eifert, he just can't stay healthy. It's actually borderlining now on like heartbreaking because by all accounts, he's a really good guy. He can't stay on the field. When he is on the field, he's a difference maker. I believe he missed his entire second season in the league with an injury of some sort, a broken leg or something. But he is a real difference maker. But, I mean, availability is your number one quality, and he just doesn't seem to ever be available for them.
Well, yeah, there's not really much more to say there other than we wait and see, and I guess we sort of feel bad for Simon a little bit, maybe. Speaking of feeling bad, a team in the division my team plays in, the Buffalo Bills, their general manager, Doug Whaley, was on the radio talking about the injuries that his team has suffered recently and went to say this. This is the game of football. Injuries are part of it. It's a violent game that I personally don't think humans are supposed to play. It's very interesting as you're the general manager of the team looking for humans to play the game at their utmost to try and win those games. He's since come back to say he had a poor choice of words. I'd say that's a really poor choice of words. Justin, if your GM came out and said these things, how do you think things would go over in Seattle?
I mean, if he used those exact words, the result would be pretty similar because it was a poor choice of words. But I think this is much ado about nothing. I mean, I think what he was trying to say was almost complimentary that, you know, human beings aren't built for this kind of wear and tear, and sort of just kind of recognize sort of the burden that these players put themselves under because they do. They put themselves under a great deal of physical risk. And I think that's really all he was trying to say was almost pay a compliment to him for and sort of recognize kind of their physical sacrifices. The fact that anybody wants to make a big deal out of this, the fact that there's a million news stories, that enough people are talking about it that we're like obligated to bring it up is just silly to me. It's just an ineloquent statement that's kind of in passing that everybody is gravitating towards, and it's dumb.
See, I disagree with you a little bit there. I think an ineloquent use of words would be something like saying, yeah, injuries are part of the game. You really don't like seeing it happen to human beings, but it happens and it's unfortunate. But I really would, I really don't want to see injuries happening to my team. I'd rather see them happening to another person's team. That's sort of an ineloquent choice of phrase there. What he said specifically was this is a game that human beings should not be playing.
Yeah. Physiologically, he's right. And that's all he was saying. It's much ado about nothing. I think it's ridiculous.
I think it touches on two things here, Jay. I don't mind Whaley's comments. He probably, you know, they slipped out and he probably thought, oh, when he said that, he probably wasn't very pleased with himself, and he dragged that back pretty quickly. The other thing is, at the end of the day, you've got a whole lot of folk out there who are totally outraged by such a statement, all around the safety and the concussions and all the rest of it. But it does touch on this sort of unsavory, soft underbelly of sports fans, where actually we quite like seeing guys dress up with helmets and pads, almost to make themselves into weapons where they can blast somebody. I think on Slack I said it was like MMA with a football thrown in. That's kind of, we like to see people hitting each other. And that, of course, is not very popular and doesn't go down well these days. But secretly, we really all do love it.
And I mean, just because you said humans aren't meant to do it doesn't necessarily, I mean, we all take it as a very negative connotation. Humans aren't meant to go to space. It's a very dangerous thing. We still do it. And we, you know, have the appropriate hero worship for the people that, you know, sacrifice, you know, that become better to go to space. Humans aren't meant to throw a 100-mile-per-hour fastball. You know, that's why they end up with Tommy John surgery and other, you know, you have pitchers go out there and literally break their arm throwing a pitch. You know, humans aren't meant to do that. You know, was he, you know, honest in his assessment that humans aren't supposed to run at each other at top speed and, you know, dive at each other? Yeah, he probably was. And it doesn't make it a bad thing. You're always going to find a subset of the population that's going to go out and do it anyway, because they're being idolized. There's an incentive to do it. And, you know, there's always people willing to, you know, collect a paycheck doing something that other people aren't, you know, willing to do.
Hmm. All right. Well, I'll see your point for now. I still look at it though, as a man in a position, where he sort of has to look at where he's sitting from, and he's got to be extra careful with his words. Like, I could imagine, could you imagine if I went out there and I said something about one of our competitors in podcasting? That would be outrageous. It just, you can't say certain things, and I don't want my GM saying this is a game that no one should be playing. It's, I don't know.
I think it would be even more apt if you're like, no one was designed to sit for an hour and talk on a podcast. It's bad for you. You know?
Yes. It's a good point. Honestly, I don't think that we were built to do things like that. Speaking of sitting, I forgot to bring this story up to you guys. It's come out from OTAs and another team in my division, the Jets. Eric Decker and Brandon Marshall, apparently not at OTAs, reasoning unbeknownst at this point, but most are sort of thinking it has to do with the fact that Ryan Fitzpatrick, not the quarterback in camp, because he hasn't been signed. He's still a free agent. What do you guys think about this? I mean, it seems like this could be a bigger deal. Honestly, they are OTA, so they're voluntary, but you really kind of want to build up the rapport with the guy who's ultimately going to be the quarterback at some point, I would assume.
See, they're so veteran. I think as long as you keep them away from fireworks on July 4th, come August 15th, show up at camp and everyone's happy.
I think what everybody is citing is a report from the New York Daily News, which, you know, on the opposite side of the country, my perspective of them is that they're little more than a tabloid, and they're just kind of speculating. The questions I would ask, and since I don't follow this team that closely, I don't know the answer to it, but do Eric Decker and Brandon Marshall have a history of not participating in OTAs? If they do, then this is just doing what veterans often do and not show up for the voluntary workouts. If they've both never missed OTAs, then maybe I think it's fair to kind of question it a little bit. But I'm just highly skeptical of any reports from the New York Daily News.
Yeah, I wouldn't trust anything from the New York Daily News. But at the same time, we're talking about Geno Smith right now as the leader in camp, as you have two younger quarterbacks behind him, one being a rookie and a guy that many of us didn't feel was a first-round draft choice, unless your name was, you know, that guy who does Monday Night Football. Yeah, Chucky. Anyway.
And all quarterbacks are first-round draft picks.
Yeah. And then we're talking about a guy who was punched in the face by one of his teammates in the locker room. So, and lost his job to Ryan Fitzpatrick because of his broken jaw. So, I don't know. To me, it sounds like this locker room isn't necessarily, you know, all gung-ho for Geno Smith.
I mean, I think it's going to boil down to the most obvious answer. You know, Brandon Marshall has 2 years left on his deal. This is the last one that has guaranteed money. Eric Decker has 3 years left on his deal, but the only thing guaranteed is $4.5 million in bonus money. And if they go out there in OTAs and they don't look, you know, like they did last year, because they have Geno Smith and, you know, just a menagerie of other substandard quarterbacks, or, you know, replacement level quarterbacks throwing them the ball, you know, it's not going to look good for them as far as their contract negotiations. They saw what happened with Demaryius Thomas last year when, you know, Peyton couldn't throw the ball more than 10 yards down the field. And, you know, they have Brock Osweiler come in, you know, for his first real NFL action. And now he gets Mark Sanchez. And so I think they are taking a very pragmatic approach of, we're not going to make ourselves look worse just because we have a, you know, a substandard quarterback that may not end up being our starting quarterback in right now.
All right. It's audience participation time, gentlemen. I'm really excited about this. We'll start with the email we have at nextfanup@gmail.com. It comes to us from Fregory Galtenovich. Name sort of sounds familiar. Let's hear the superfans talk about something positive for once. All-American running back James Conner returning for his senior season at Pitt. Hashtag hail to Pitt. Announced that he is now cancer-free after being diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma on December 4th, 2015. The Erie McDowell grad is also recovering from a knee injury and should be a day two pick in 2017 if everything goes well with his continued rehab. Heading into his junior season, many thought he was the second best running back in college football. He rushed for over 1,700 yards, seventh in the country, 26 touchdowns, ACC Player of the Year, and All-American in 2014 as a sophomore. As a true freshman, he rushed for 229 yards in a bowl game. The 229 yards broke Tony Dorsett's school record for rushing yards in a bowl game. Very glad to see this story. He turned 21 on May 5th of 2016. I'm sure he's going to have an NFL career to rival fellow Pitt running backs Tony Dorsett, Curtis Martin, and LaShawn McCoy. Thanks, Greg Steeler superfan. Oh, come on, Greg.
What can I say? It's a feel-good story. I mean, playing at the one of the best colleges in the country. I mean, why not? So... He came out of nowhere as a sophomore. Everyone, I mean, what happened with him getting injured last year was heartbreaking enough, but then, you know, to be a 20-year-old kid diagnosed with cancer, I just can't imagine it. So I'm super happy to see this news. It's just great.
Now, what was that fan's name? Fred, something like that. I like what he thinks. And Greg, I think he was taking shots at you with that, since it's well established that you have a negative opinion on everything at all times.
Perhaps.
Oh, that's really well done. That's well done. All right, back to our Twitter poll. Should the Super Bowl Roman numerals remain? I got these responses on my Facebook page from Jeremy Roll. It's fun. I have no issue with it. Scott Lenz says the inclusion of Roman numerals in the Super Bowl helps to identify the people who didn't pay attention in school. That's right, Scott. Stay in school. We also got this one from at Fight on Twist on Twitter. I'd like to see one Super Bowl with hieroglyphics. That'd be an interesting one.
Is he tapping into our conversation? That's a unauthorized wiretap, sir.
You may have.
That came directly from the NSA.
At Last Week's Balls, they mentioned we liked talking about Super Bowl L or Super Bowl. That's interesting. James, again, you guys cheating here. At Boiler_James, down with Roman numerals. This isn't an Italian game after all. So again,
that man is wise and should be listened to.
Absolutely.
Once again, we bring up the topics, but we never quite find the actual answer, as I feel that the response is still mixed. There's no overwhelming response to get rid of Roman numerals in Super Bowls. At least not yet. So, that's our show.
Hey, Jay. Breaking news.
Breaking news. Oh, I wish I had a breaking news sounder.
Ravens forfeit a week of OTA practices for violating the CBA for their using pads last week. So, talking about things going right in my world, that is one of them.
That's a pretty harsh penalty.
Well, that's exactly what the Seahawks got. Justin, you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, that sounds about right. Pretty similar to what we got tagged with. We actually got nailed twice. The second time, and it ended up being a fine to the organization and a fine to Pete Carroll for dollar amounts that would completely change most of our lives, and they pulled out of their back pockets. I mean, a week of voluntary workouts, I mean, that's as slap on the wrist as you can get. But, I mean, it's all right, fine. I doubt that's going to make a huge difference. But if they did break the rules, you got to do something, I guess.
Do we know if they'll be taking it to the Supreme Court?
We don't. But it would be interesting to see if the Ravens decided to follow in the footsteps of Tom Brady, being as the Ravens, one of the biggest shouters of "you cheat" that I ever known. Perhaps only second to the Indianapolis Colts. But
yeah, but come on, Jay. Can we agree that there's a difference between you practice with too many clothes on and you're cheating in games?
No. There is no difference. Not according to all of those who have pointed fingers. There is no difference. It's black and white. It's black and white. In any case, I will rest my case. And that is the show, ladies and gentlemen. For our superfans, Greg, our Steelers superfan, James, our Texan superfan, Neil, the Washington superfan over in Scotland, Justin, our Seahawks superfan, and of course, much thanks to Arthur Arkish, ProFootballWeekly.com. Please do go check out the site. Give them some feedback. Let them know what you'd like to hear more of on their site. They have a ton of podcasts. They're all available on blogtalkradio.com. And of course, you can listen to them on iTunes, just like you can our show. Please subscribe, leave us a review on iTunes, Next Fan Up. And for those of you with Android phones, use the AHA Radio app to find our podcast. It's the easiest way to get our podcast right to your phone. And of course, if you happen to be one of the lucky ones that have the car that already has the AHA Radio app in the dashboard, you can listen to us right in your car dashboard, which is pretty cool. Tweet us at NFU Podcast. Send us those emails, nextfanup@gmail.com. I want to hear more about the Roman numerals thing. We'll get to the bottom of this sooner or later. And of course, follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/NFU Podcast. I'm Pod Vader. I leave you, as always, with Jeff Fisher. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is four quarters long.
Clearly, as the European correspondent, I have obviously spoken to all the Romans prior to the podcast today, and they want their Roman numerals back.
You're like the most un-American person ever. Jeez, Neil.
Tell you That's what. Probably the best compliment you've ever given me.
I can't wait till we annex another country. Then we can host, we can have the Super Bowl in like a foreign, what used to be a foreign country.
We could have had it in Iraq. I'm just saying. That could have been, we could have had the next World Cup in, you know, in Qatar and then in Iraq or something.
Oh, yeah. Right, just, yeah, the worst thing that could happen.
I just tweeted that out.
If you did the Super Bowl over there in the Middle East, you could have used Egyptian hieroglyphics for your cover of your.
So you have like a bird and a
Super Bowl swan feather.
Yeah, you know what would happen is I would say, great, now we're talking about Super Bowl feather, Eye of Osiris, Falcon, and you guys can be like, you idiot, that's 57, not 55.
All right, here we go.
Come on, guys. Don't you want snow in the Super Bowl? It'd be fantastic, a snow game.
No, I don't.
Greg doesn't want snow. He wants maybe IEDs, but not snow.
By the way, be careful what you wish for. Bill Belichick knows how to control the weather. And since the Patriots will be in most of those Super Bowls. All right.
Hey, now.
Shouldn't we do an extra little session there, Jay, on the Tom Brady news in terms of his going to the Supreme Court or going to whatever level of court it is?
Unless it's been confirmed that the hearing is happening, I would say no.
No, he just had to file the thing on Monday, and then it's going to be, the judges have either 4 or 6 weeks to decide if they're going to hear it, and then 7 out of the 13 have to agree to hear it for it to go in front of all of them.
And I know the Patriots sent like a we back Tom Brady thing to the judges, and a group of scientists did the same thing.
I wish I could remember where I first saw this, but it was basically saying, if you hate the Patriots, you should vote against Trump, because Tom Brady is Trump's friend. And by the time Trump gets into office, he'll be able to appoint a Brady friendly Supreme Court judge.
It's true. It's a very good point.
was the Patriots letter supporting Tom Brady a bit like Terrell Owens with his he's my quarterback sort of
it might have been. I didn't read the letter. At this point I'm resigned to the fact that this will be much like Star Caps, that the court is going to decide to rehear it. So he'll remain playing through this season, and then next year it's going to be heard, but the ruling won't come in time for the season. So he'll play all next season as well. And then when the ruling does come, it'll probably be against him. He'll appeal it to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court will wait a few months. He'll still play the whole season. Then they'll say, no, we're not going to hear it. And then he's going to retire.
Andrew Brandt was quite strong, saying that the chances of it being heard were minuscule. Is that correct?
I would hope so. I'll just
he'll know. He knows more better than any of us. That's for sure.
I would really hope that it's minuscule, that the it gets before the Supreme Court. It doesn't seem like a case that would make it to the Supreme Court. To me, it does seem a little open and shut. I mean, there's a collective bargaining agreement. This was collectively bargained. It's in there. Tom Brady is lost. If that's the basis of the case, I think the Brady and his legal team is trying to make it that he's been wrongfully accused of a crime he never committed in the first place. And that's commissioner the power to do whatever he wants willy nilly is sort of what I think they're trying to argue.
I've made it clear that I think he's a dirty, rotten cheater. That being said, the significance of this and why if it does go before the Supreme Court is important is that things like this they're not about specific cases. This is a question about whether or not a union can collectively bargain an agreement and be bound to it if there's a lot of evidence that whatever the punishment handed down is not reasonable and not based in fact. So if there is a ruling against the league, which I don't think there will be, that does have ramifications for everybody who's part of a union who is punished under collectively bargained rules. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, people like to diminish the importance of this. Oh, it's just Tom Brady versus the league. Well, that's as far as the courts are concerned. They don't give a shit that it's Tom Brady in the league. It's a question of collectively bargained rules, organized labor, and employers, and what rights of punishment they have, and how far that goes.
Yep. And I'll remember, and this is part of the thing I don't get, is that Brady is one of the few players left in the league that actually had a chance to vote against Rodgers' powers of being the final, you know, arbiter in all these cases. So, and to my knowledge, he didn't vote against it back then. And I just think that's an interesting, like, side note, this whole thing, is that he maybe regrets his decision of going with the CBA when it was voted on in, 2009 or 2010, or whatever that was.
Mm.
Yeah, I'll bet the next CBA is going to be even uglier than this last one when it comes time to, like, vote and ratify it.
But they want money. Like, the players don't make money when they're negotiating the CBAs. So, I mean, it'll be surprising to see what happens, you know? That's what they always get them on. So.
Isn't there still like 15 more years left on this CBA? It was negotiated.
I thought it was 2020 or something like that.
I thought it was 2020, but I thought like the year or maybe 2 years before it, there was like an out clause that somebody could take. It's been a while. I don't remember the rule exactly.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, if it's 2020, they'll have the benefits of hindsight. But
oh man!
The one thing, Jay, the one thing is that karma is a bit funny. So, with your offensive line, that you had last year. If that doesn't improve, he may be missing more than four games next year.
Oh, how dare you. How dare you.
So the
got Jonathan Cooper.
The current CBA signed in 2011, no opt-out for either side, and expires after the 2020 season.
All right. Well, so we got four more years.
2020, I believe that's Roman numeral XII, right?
That one's easy, man. MMXX.